What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. But that's no problem.
I don't know why sometimes. Welcome back, guys. DG Asa and KMOX 405. Our buddy Matt Pauly is here from the sports department. We were just discussing Mr. Uecker off the air because Matt spent many, many years working with the Milwaukee Brewers. And I'm just going to let you state what you just said, but you made an excellent point I hadn't thought of, that not only was he Mr. Baseball, but no one's really had a career like this.
No, I mean, he went from playing baseball to then he got into broadcasting, but he got into acting and he got into comedy. He was on Mr. Belvedere. He set the record for most appearances on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. He did over 100 appearances on The Tonight Show. When the Brewers would be playing in California, he would go tape in the afternoon and he'd show up to the Brewers game, second, third inning, whenever it was. But he was there all the time. I mean, that career arc to be ball player, to be a legit funny person. He did some stand-up comedy at one point in his career. He was really good at it. He was the best at being funny, but being able to deadpan. I heard him talk about it once where he said one of the things that bugs him now about comedy is people laugh too often at their own jokes, that you gotta get the joke off and then you gotta keep the face still. And he was really, really good at that. And that's pretty amazing because, again, funniest guy in every room he's ever been in, and he never broke.
How was he just as a broadcaster?
He was great. You know, in his heyday, he was really, really good. He did a lot of national stuff. But even with the Brewers, he was 90 years old. He wasn't the same guy over the last few years, and he'd been dealing with health. He had tons of health issues over his time. But at his best, Uke is as good of a baseball broadcaster as there was out there. And then you add in the fact that he was so damn funny. It was perfect. It was a lot of Brewers fans enjoyed the blowouts one way or another because it became story time with Uke. Yeah. And it was really, really good.
So what's it like in Milwaukee today, you think?
Sad. So sad. He was the number one celebrity and number one most beloved person in Milwaukee. And it takes a while to get to number two on that list. I don't know who it is. You know, I'd be disingenuous to sit here and tell you that I had a great relationship with him. We worked together. We weren't like pals, but friends or anything. I got there late enough in his career that he had enough friends and he wasn't going to jump with in other people. But I got the news this morning, and it just stopped. I have a hard. It really broke me up. I feel a little empty all day long. And he's one of the final guys in that generation. Actually, John Rooney actually called me this morning. We had a really fun, interesting conversation about it. You think about that generation of broadcaster, and Jack Buck's in that group as well. Those guys just aren't with us anymore. Yeah, all those guys. And Harwell, like whoever. And but Uecker was different because of how... This isn't a shot at like a Jack Buck or a Mike Shannon, who we all beloved so much, but we've had so many like great people come through St. Louis. Like Uecker was the guy in Milwaukee,
the only guy
in Milwaukee, and for him to accomplish all the things that he had accomplished. And let's not forget his St. Louis connection. He played with the Cardinals. He married a St. Louis girl. He was still married to somebody from St. Louis. He loved being here and coming here, and he was very proud of his connection to the city of St. Louis. But he was born in Milwaukee, and everybody felt like they knew Bob Uecker. And so when he didn't do road games for a long time.
Yeah, it's been years.
Yeah, like over 10 years, because I got there like 7 years or 10 years ago, and he wasn't doing them then. when the team was on the road, I would be sitting in the studios, WTMJ in Milwaukee. And if the radio started and it wasn't Bob Uecker's voice welcoming fans to the broadcast, our phone lines would ring and people would say, "Where's Uke?" He didn't do road games for 10 years. And people are still calling up and saying, "Where's Uke?" Well, I guess I got to turn off the radio. It's not Uecker. And this isn't a shot. Like the guy who would normally be there, Jeff Levering, is one of
the greatest
baseball broadcasters walking the face of the earth right now. Not a shot at anybody who's involved. But, yeah, it's he was Milwaukee Brewers radio. And in many ways, he was the Milwaukee Brewers.
Do you think, I hope my question makes sense, because you have the OGs in everything. You have the Uekers, you have the Johnny Carsons, who for my generation, your generations, were just untouchably great. But they've moved on, they've retired, they've passed away. Now in sports, you have you guys. And you have Joe Buck, and you have Ricky and John. Do you think that our generation will be viewed as that by the younger generations, or are they just untouchable?
I think it's different. I think our media landscape is so different now, where like if you are great at what you do, well, you might want to start a YouTube channel. You might want to start a podcast. Like you might want to do one of those things because you can like monetize it yourself and you're going to draw people from one place to another. There's still like, I'll meet somebody and I'll tell them, "Oh yeah, I'm the pre and post game show host for the Cardinals. Our games air on KMOX." And they're like, "Games on radio? You paid for that?" Like there's some people who just don't understand the importance of, and I'm not trying to be like all self-important here. I'm just trying to use this as an example. But media is so fragmented now that you're not like forced to know that something even exists where that wasn't the case at 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, it can't be replicated because the circumstances are different. I mean, it used to be that your only daily access to your team was on the radio broadcast. So that would forge those connections with Jack Buck and Vin Scully and Harry Carey and Bob Uecker and all of those guys, Mike Shannon. But yeah, I know. I guess we could say it starting in the probably more in the 90s because games were on TV in the 80s when I was a kid, but they weren't on TV all the time. It was maybe a game or two a week. You know, here it would have been a game on Channel 5 and, you know, like where I lived, you'd have one game maybe on the NBC station there. And then they had like this closed circuit television service called On TV before cable. This is before cable. You could get this antenna on your house and you would get the like one game a week and you'd get a boxing match here and a movie there. It was really kind of sporadic. So you didn't have the day-to-day TV access. And now not only do you have that, but you've got the access to it on social media and you've got your ability to stream it on your phone.
Such good points. I remember, so I've been doing this 25 years, probably about 10 years, 15 years in, because Stephen DC gave me my start. I asked my boss back then, and this is very self-serving, I'm not proud of it, but I said, "I've been number one at that time longer than Stephen DC were. Why am I not as big a deal?" And he looked me right in the eye and he said, "You never will be." Like, it's just a different landscape, like mm-hmm. like you said, Matt, that back then people were obsessed with it and now they have a gazillion things to choose from. So stars are now pretty much with a lowercase s for all of us.
Yeah.
So I think that makes sense. Bringing it up to date, Wheels, will you kind of tell the listeners about Bernie's piece on Scoops today and then we'll get Matt's reaction?
Yeah. So we talked about this a little bit on Friday, Matt. Bernie and I here on DGS, we were talking about, and I think we had originally started talking about it last Thursday. But it's about like perspective when it comes to where the Cardinals are right now. And I'm sure you experience this attitude that this should never happen to the Cardinals. They should never be bad. They should never have a downturn for a couple years. They should never be this long without a World Series or this long without advancing into the playoffs. Well, today on Scoops, Bernie went in and he went through every team and their dry spells. And just to provide the perspective that, even though the Cardinals are where they are, it's not that bad when you compare to what Cleveland fans have gone through, Pittsburgh fans, Baltimore fans, Detroit fans, even Dodgers fans. Like until these last few years, they had only, I think, made the playoffs in 6 out of 24 seasons. So the Dodgers thing of them being this monster is brand new,
yeah.
And it may or may not last. But right now, they're the monster that everybody hates. And he had this fact that I thought was fascinating. So since 2010, okay, from 2010 until this year, how much money do you think the Yankees spent on payroll to not win a single World Series and only appear in one, and it was this year's?
Because, like, a lot.
$3.2 billion to reach one World Series and not win any in a 15-season span. And you want to talk about a dry spell with the Cardinals here. And again, it's not that you, and the point was really not nobody has anything to complain about. We all have the same fair, legitimate complaints. But whenever you're looking at something, you should be looking at perspective, right? Like you could say, I'm hungry. Yeah, but it's not the same as the person who's hungry in Darfur who's not eaten for 4 days or something like that, right? Like that perspective helps you understand better where you are and where it really can be bad.
Yeah, and two things can be true. All that can be true, and we can also sit here and say the Cardinals could have done some things over the last few years to avoid where they're at right now.
Yeah.
But a lot of teams could have done things in their years, and they didn't, and they got to these points. So,
well, there's a reason every franchise has this.
Yes, yeah.
And most of them are way worse than one 90-loss season and then a season over 500 and you know that was preceded by a playoff run. Like, or a playoff appearance anyway, like most of them will get way worse. And the hope, by the way, is that this doesn't get worse.
Yeah. And look, this team could be competitive and this team could be surprising this year.
Yeah. I'm big on perspective in sports because we lose it as fans because we're so involved in what we watch. You don't think about what you're not watching. So in football, there are more football fans who love their team but also follow the entire league. Then there are baseball fans who love their team and also follow the entire league because baseball, you watch your team every day, right? You don't have time to watch all those other things. All the things that fans complain about with your front, this could be a Cardinals fan I'm talking to, a Cubs fan, a Dodgers fan, Yankees fan, Tigers fan. The things you hate about your front office, other front offices do every day.
Yes.
The things you hate about your manager, other managers do every day. You know, during the time period where Mike Matheny was managing here, and it was before Mike Schilt, there was a lot like, they should fire him and go get Joe Maddon. In Tampa Bay, they were killing Joe Maddon because they hated his lineups and they hated the way that he did things. Like, it's always that way everywhere. But when you don't know that, you think the problems you see are only happening with your team. And they're not problems with your team. They are just problems with being in sports.
Can you talk a little bit? I was listening to you guys last night on TIPM talking about the young kids, the Honduras and Venezuela and all this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then talk a little bit about the minor leaguers who will be a part of spring training.
Yeah, which one do you want to start with?
So it's the
NRIs today.
Yeah. So all the recent first round picks, J.J. Weatherholt, Chase Davis, Cooper Jerpy, all going to be there. Yeah, Quinn Matthews is going to be there. But I think I'm really excited to see what J.J. Weatherholt looks like in Major League Baseball spring training games. Because he is somebody that the organization wants him to force the issue. We're late in the season. He is pushing himself onto a big league roster spot.
Yeah, and I think they want that same thing eventually for Quinn Matthews, too. Yeah. And so Matthews was Baseball America's Minor League Pitcher of the Year. Not Cardinals Pitcher of the Year, Minor League Pitcher of the Year, and he went through, what, four levels?
All four levels. He went low A, high A, double A, triple A.
And he'll probably be at Memphis this year.
Yeah.
I guess unless it's a disastrous spring, but it probably won't be. But it's always nice to get that look, to see them with the other guys. And, you know, teams do expedite this now more than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't usually the case in the past where your first pro spring you would be in Major League camp, but these guys are advanced. Quinn Matthews is a Stanford guy. He's an advanced age, you know, for a prospect. J.J. Weatherholt is an advanced player coming out of college. There's no reason to hold him back. Just let him fly.
Now, I've heard, probably from you guys, that Weatherholt is sort of a Mason Wynn, just made of confidence.
Oh, he definitely has that.
There's a Bryce Harper comp when it comes to his personality.
He knows he's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's in a good way, by the way, because you have to have that. I'm comparing him to, like, if you're thinking, like, what could he be? Like, what's the best-case scenario for J.J. Weatherholt? I'm thinking Chase Utley.
Yeah.
Like, guy that was a regular all-star three-hole hitter for a World Series team. That's the best case. It doesn't mean he's going to get there, but he is legitimately a possible offensive star.
And the teenagers, anyone stand out to you?
So Pedro Strop's kid is in there. His name's Royal
Strop. Do you remember
Strope?
Pedro Strop? Yeah. Cubs closer. Yeah, the wild-ass reliever.
Yeah, yeah. They gave him $1.4 million. He's 16 years old. The kid from Panama, who's a catcher, I don't remember his name, he got more money than any other kid from Panama. So the Cardinals spent some money this year.
Yeah, I get every time we do this, I cannot get over how much I hate this thing about Major League Baseball. I hate that you can go out there and make agreements with 14-year-olds in the Dominican and then sign them at 16, but the kid from Canada, from the U.S., from Puerto Rico has to wait to be drafted until they're out of high school or out of college. And these kids can go in there and just negotiate whatever they're able to get. They're essentially free agents from the time they're born, but a kid who's going to high school here with the same talent, the same everything, has to wait. I hate this structure. I think it's ridiculous. There should be an international draft.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it, buddy. Let me give you a recommendation. If you ever heard this band, Jellyfish, it is a Dave Glover and Jimmy Griffin favorite. They're fantastic. If you like the Beatles, you'll love these guys. So check them out. They're called Jellyfish. Andrew, you are afraid of dreaming.
Yeah, we kind of got to talking about this a little bit earlier. It freaks me out to think about. If I think too hard about dreaming, it'll like keep me up at night, right? Because I don't like the idea that's like, hey, you're gonna experience something, you're gonna live through something that you have no control over. You don't know if it's gonna be vivid, right. You don't know if it's gonna be pleasant, you don't know if it's gonna be horrifying. You have no control over it. Just kind of random chance is gonna take over from here. As to what kind of life you're gonna live between now and when you wake up and gotta go to work in the morning, and I don't like it. I don't care for it, and I'm not even particularly prone to like nightmares.
It's a
and
weird
stuff like
thing.
That. I just don't like the idea.
The best I understand, the best explanation I've ever had for it is just it's the brain's way of like taking out the trash, just sort of like working through things. But like last night, I'm a very vivid dreamer. Last night I had a dream and there was this woman in it. It wasn't like a romantic or sexual thing. She was just helping me in my quest. I always have a quest. And we developed a relationship over 18 seconds of dreaming or something like that. But I'm thinking about it now. Like it's like a little tiny life I lived.
Isn't it crazy? Like the difference in how a dream seems to be really long, but in the reality of it,
yeah.
It's like you said, it's minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe, right?
Yeah.
So how does time get distorted in your brain?
It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's wild.
And we really don't understand. I have a friend who's an anesthesiologist, and we were having dinner one night, and I'm asking him a million questions, and he said, I'll tell you this much right here. We don't know how it works. We know how it works enough to put you under, but there are 1,000 levels of unconscious, and we don't understand 999 of them.
Yeah, they're all explained in Inception.
Did you like
that one?
I
hated that movie.
It was fine.
I hate that movie.
I thought
so
it was fun to look at. Like, there was interesting stuff, but it was a little much.
It's just like every turn, it's like, just kidding.
Yeah.
It's a dream.
It's yeah, like, this
okay,
is a dream. Yeah, I agree.
Why am I watching this?
I hated it because of that. Like, I hated the ending because of that. Like, is he awake or is he not? Just tell me.
Stupid Inception.